Hey everybody, quick introduction to today's episode with my guest, Carl Henry. Carl is the leading fitness expert on RTE's Operation Transformation, and this podcast was gold. The one thing I'll say beforehand is apologies a little bit for the sound quality at the beginning, even though I have my new mic that I'm recording this introduction on. I had it hooked up to the iMac recording this because Carl was in Puerto Ventura and we were doing it over Skype. And I had the mic plugged in, but I forgot to turn on the quick player. So I sound a little bit choppy at parts, particularly in the beginning, and then it cleans up as we go along. But this episode was gold. We talk a lot on getting Carl's business off the ground in the beginning and how he went 25 grand in debt to turning around, setting targets for first 70 grand a year and how to reverse engineer that and then scaling up and up and up. So if you're a personal trainer or someone that would like to go into the fitness industry someday, the first 15-20 minutes of this podcast are absolute gold if you're in that demographic. After that, then we got very real with the mindset side of things. And because of Carl's history and years of being in the media and being on television and doing so much magazine work and newspaper articles, he spoke about dealing with hate and negativity aimed in his direction and how he's handled that, and how at one stage he got a 1500 word email of somebody just lambasting everything about the way that he looks, about the way that he squats, about the way that he does things, and how he handled that in different situations. So if you're someone that's ever struggled, like I know I have, with negativity aimed in my direction and dealing with hate from the outside world or from external things, some of the strategies he gave here are absolutely gold. So there's something in this episode for everybody. So without further ado, I introduce today's guest, Carl Henry, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode.
You're listening to the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where Irish fitness entrepreneur Brian Keane answers your questions and interviews leaders in the world of fitness, health, mindset, and natural wellness. Come join the fun.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Brian Keane Fitness Podcast, where we talk everything fitness, nutrition, and mindset to help you with your goals. I'm really excited today to have my guest with me, Carl Henry. Carl is one of Ireland's most recognized and leading personal trainers, and his name is synonymous with training in Ireland. He has honors in sports management from UCD, as well as two personal training qualifications. He founded Carl Henry Personal Training in 2004 and is responsible for creating some of the most famous physiques in fashion, music, politics, and industry. Carl is a leading fitness expert on RTE's Operation Transformation and has been working with RTE since the show started 11 years ago. His weekly health column is featured in the Irish Independent every Tuesday. I actually read last week's one on sleep. It was awesome. Just a side note. Carl has written 5 books, most recently his Healthy Living Handbook with Penguin Ireland, and he's appeared on the panel on RTE, to the News Talk Breakfast Show, The Daily Show, The Afternoon Show, as well as numerous other TV shows and features in magazines on a regular basis. He's also the host of the amazing podcast, The Real Health Podcast, which I'll be linking in the description, which everyone should check out. Carl, welcome to the show.
Hey, Brian, how are you, buddy? How's it going?
Things are awesome. Just quickly before we get into your background, tell everybody where you are.
Yeah.
Just because as I speak with you, the rain, if you hear any noise in the background, is lashing against my window. So just tell everyone where you are right now.
Yeah, I'm actually on holidays. I'm sitting in Puerto Ventura looking at the sea, the sunshine, the windsurfers. I'm just actually back from the gym and I was lying out in the sun before that. So it's slightly nicer, the weather over here, and it's been pretty good all week, which is great. But looking forward to getting home on Sunday. I always love coming home after a holiday. It's the best bit of going away is the coming home bit, regardless of the weather. But now that the new year is good, the weather's been good. It's been a nice little bit of downtime. It's been a really busy 6 months, so it's the first kind of break that I've had since Christmas, so it's great.
Yeah, mate, you're absolutely smashing it in everything that you do. Anytime I check your Instagram stories, I either see you training yourself on the bike or with clients or going to work, coming home from work. It's awesome. Tell me a little bit, Carol, what got you... Tell everybody a little bit more about yourself first. I talked a little bit in the introduction, but you've been in the fitness industry for so long, helping and transforming the lives of people for countless years. Tell everyone a little bit more about yourself, anything that I may have left out in the introduction.
Yeah, it makes me feel kind of old, to be honest with you. I've hit my mid-30s now, and I've been personal training people for the good 17 to 18 years. We have a family fitness business. My dad had a gym since, and still does, since 1986 in Pembroke Street in Dublin, and I very much grew up around the gym environment. I was there before school, I was there after school. I was there school. I wasn't in school. I was either in the gym, or my mum had a, she had a healthy food company, so I was in either one of the businesses. So I just kind of grew up around health. I played rugby all through school at a fairly high level. Wasn't the fittest player on the pitch. Fitness isn't something that, that comes particularly easily to me. I have to work very hard at it. Went to do my degree in UCD, did a sports science, a sports management degree for 3 years there. And to pay my way through college, I started personal training people in their homes. In their offices. So I had my car at the time. I got some dumbbells, I got a med ball and a mat and struck it into the car and went to somebody's house. I charged €22 a session because I was just starting off. I'd only qualified for my diploma in personal training. So I charged what I felt was value at the time and went to someone's house. That built up over the course of the first year in college to pretty much a full client base and then built in year two and year three. So by the time I came out of my college, I had my degree, but I also had a business that was up and running. It was very low expenses, so people are listening in and wanting to get into the health industry. That's a really simple way to do it because you have your insurance, you have your car, you have some weights, but that's pretty much it. You don't have to have the gym space. You don't have to have the expense of doing that. So from a business perspective, that's how it all started. From my own kind of health perspective, played rugby, went to college, put on the freshman 15, as they call it. Enjoyed college a little bit too much.
There's two tubas there.
People do, you know, people do that, and I certainly did. And I started running a little bit, where like 1, 2, 3, 4 k's were a challenge. It all kind of kicked off. I went hill walking with a good friend. He was in his Cormac was in his mid to late 60s at the time. He beat me up the mountain up on Wicklow by about 20 minutes. And I was so mortified. That was a trigger moment for me. I think when it comes to health, people have to have a trigger moment to change their health. And that was certainly mine. I was still lifting weights and stuff. I'm still teaching people. But in terms of fitness, my fitness had gone totally askew. And that was the moment that I really realized it. And when I came down the mountain, I said, right, things need to change. I need to, you know, I need to get fitter. I need to, you know, get out of the college. Get out of the college bar. You know, that was the moment for me. So I started running, started doing 5Ks. I started then, that went led to a 10K, which led to a half marathon, which over the course of a couple of years led into marathons. When I came out of college, I had my PT business, that's what I did. And then on a personal perspective, I got into running. My first marathon would have been about the year after I left college. I'd be quite driven, I'd be quite focused. I love to work, I love what I do. So like once I finished college, it was straight into trying to build a business up to a full client base. So full client base at the time was 55 sessions a week. That was working 7 days a week, doing 6 or 7 clients a day, traveling to and from people's homes. I sat down when I went to do a master's in Smurfit Business School. That totally stressed me out. I wasn't healthy. I wasn't well. I was just the stress of it. Just I couldn't handle it. Halfway through the exams, I did something I'd never do. I got up and I walked out. I'm actually quite shy. I'm quite reserved. I don't like to be the center of attention on a personal level. So getting up and walking out was a big deal, but it just wasn't the right fit. And off the back of that, I went home and just sat down and started writing out a business plan and a business strategy, which was over the next 5 years, what do I want to do? And the first thing was to build up the PT business. That's what my business was. And then the second thing was to try and build a brand a little bit. But at the time, there was no real fitness brand in Ireland, where there is now. Like, you know, there's your own, there's myself, there's Dominic, there's Manelli, there's loads of people around who are really good at what they do and have a really good brand. At the time when I was starting out, there was actually very little. There was no one synonymous brand. Social media hadn't really kicked off yet. It was just starting. And I thought I saw a gap in the market, which was for a brand that would have books and that would have, you know, write for newspapers and I didn't know how I was going to make that happen, but I believe that if I just worked hard enough that I would hopefully get a chance to do something. And 17 years later, yeah, that's what basically what we've done. It's been so fast. It's gone so quickly, but it's basically, and even now, it's just graft. It's hard work. like we lecture all the time, we go to courses or colleges or meet people for coffee who've just qualified, and they're like, oh, I want to do what you do. I'm like, I put my life on hold for 8 years. I worked 7 days a week for the first 8 years. I love to work, and I just love what I do. And same as yourself, it's a very addictive job in many respects, because the field of factors so big, from working with a client or putting a podcast together and people benefiting from that, or you know, it's incredibly addictive. And so that's basically my history. That's how I started. That's how my business started. I started to write for the Irish Independent. Actually, Social and Personal magazine was the very first publication I wrote for. And off the back of that, I got picked up by the Irish Independent and Help Them Living. Off the back of that, I went for coffee with a guy. And said, look, oh, wait, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, I want to create a fitness brand. I don't know how that works. I don't know how you do it. But that's what I'd love to do. What I'd love, you know, of all these. Because when you're in your early 20s, you've no fear. It's brilliant. It's like the best thing ever. You're not scared of anything, because the world is your oyster. So I was like, oh, I don't want to have this. I want to do this. But I've no idea how to do it. He's like, well, look, I'm an agent. I manage talent, and we'd love to work with you and let's see how we go. And so it was Noel Kelly and NK Management. And then about a year later, I got a phone call, which was, look, we're putting this show together on 2FM with Jerry Ryan. It's called Operation Transformation. Do you fancy it? And I was like, yeah. I've never done radio before. I'd never been on radio before. When I get really nervous, I have a stutter. When I was in school, I wouldn't read aloud in class. I wouldn't read a book in class. So the idea of being on radio was absolutely frightening. But, you know, the brand, I wanted to grow it. And here was an opportunity. So I said, sure, look, I'll do it. Let's see what happens. And that's how the whole Operation Transformation thing started. That went really, really well. We did it on radio for a couple of weeks. And then off the back of that, they decided to make it a TV show and for the TV audition. Same thing. I'd never been in front of a camera before, but said, look, we'll go, give it a go. And I managed to get it, and then every year, pretty much since, I've had there's auditions, not quite every year, but certainly for the first 7 or 8, I had to go back and do screen tests all the time. And we're 12 seasons in, which is amazing, heading towards the next season next year. So it's I suppose that's a synopsis of me and as the company, how it grew. On a personal level, I got into marathons. I'd be a slight extremist. Then I got into Ironman triathlons.
Oh, nice.
For a couple of years. I did 4 of them. Well, actually, I tried to do 4 of them. I did 1. I overtrained for the other 3. Ended up in A&E in each event. I've attempted to overtrain.
It comes with part of the parcel, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Like, I just love to, because I'm not naturally fit, I love to see what I can do with it. So I love to see what I can train my body to do. And the Ironman thing hadn't kicked off yet. We were, again, that was kind of ahead of the curve. So a friend of mine rang me one day and said, I'm doing this race. Do you fancy it? So I said, so I signed up, I bought a bike, I joined a pool, and over 6 months tried to train for it. And then eventually burned out, which tends to happen to me as well. So I took a year off, I couldn't train for a year, basically. And then got back into running, did half marathons, and then decided to go into ultra marathons. I've done 5 40 milers, and then I went for the Connemara 100. I've tried that twice. I haven't finished it either time.
That runs past my house, so you can come in for coffee next time you do it. It literally, as I'm recording this podcast, the all of the marathons and the ultra run straight past my house. So next time you try and do it, pop in here. I'll give you an energy gel, some coffee, and we'll make sure you get it done.
It's an amazing part of the world. Like, again, the issue with both of those was the fact that just the schedule of work and training combined just. You know, the one Ironman that I finished well, was 11 or just over 11 and a half hours. I pulled back my work a little bit to train more, and trying to do both together for me for a really big event like that, I just tend to burn out. And the first year I got to 86 miles, I think, and the second year I got to 50. And again, both years, my wife's a GP, she put me into A&E both times. So that's on a personality level, that's pretty much, you know, I push hard. I push my boundaries in terms of work and in terms of the kind of events that I do. And I kind of back racing. I took a year off after that, and then I'm back this year doing race around Ireland, a bike race in August for part of a 4-man relay, trying to do that. So yeah, I suppose for your listeners who mightn't, you know a whole lot about me, that's basically it. I think when you're on TV, people see you as uber confident, maybe uber incredibly, you know, very confident to break the brash. I'm actually the opposite on a personal level. I'd be very quiet. I hate being center of attention. I just a very just private person. On a work level, I would have developed a little bit more of a personality, if you like, to be able to present on telly or to do corporate lectures or do the podcast stuff. But that's all driven, not by ego, but that's all driven by, I just want to improve people's health. And they give you amazing, like your own podcast. Like having a podcast gives you an amazing chance to improve somebody's health. So that's what got me into trying to record one. And the TV show the same, and the book's the same. They're all just methods of trying to get people healthier. Where I think people often think there's an ego that goes with it. With myself, there certainly isn't. I don't have one. It's just trying to get people healthier in the simplest way possible. And as a brand, I think that's the niche that we sit in. Health has never been bigger. It's a huge market now. And our brand is experience. Our brand is very much the beginner, the elite athlete. I'm fascinated by it, but on a work level, it doesn't interest me. The people who are just starting or want to make, like, you know, kind of long-term improvements, that's very much the niche that we sit in, and that we try and hold on to as much as we can, because that's, you know, that's what I love to do. Weight loss is generally, and general fitness are my two loves, and on a client basis, they're the kind of clients that we tend to attract. The hardcore CrossFitters, they don't come into us. If they did, it wouldn't be my style, it wouldn't be my knowledge area. I'd recommend them to a different trainer. We do that loads with clients who come in the door. If I can't achieve the goals they're looking for, well then there's no point in bringing them paying their hard earned money. So we'll recommend other trainers for them who will help them hit their goals. So that's in about 5 minutes. That's a synopsis of me and what I do, I suppose.
I love it. There's so much I could pull out there. I didn't want to cut you off at any stage, but there's so much value. I'm going to pick out a couple of things just that really landed with me and resonated. Firstly, I know there's a lot of people that listen to the podcast. We're very, very fortunate with our numbers now. We're at that kind of 60, 70, 80, 90,000 downloads a month, depending on the month. And I know there's a big chunk of personal trainers and fitness people listening. And you made a great point there that I just want to pull out about when you started your business first and working with people while you were still studying in college. And there's this kind of fallacy that people have, I find sometimes, that are starting either a fitness journey or a business journey, where they wait for all the lights to turn green before they start. And I love that you said that you use training to pay your way through college. And then when you had your degree, you already had a base of people, you had got some of your mistakes out of the way, and you were ready to go. I think there's so much knowledge in that I think, regardless of whoever's listening and where you're at in your life, the lights are never going to always be green. That sometimes you have to just go and trust the process as you go along. And just to piggyback on that, one of the things I say regularly in the podcast is success leaves clues. And you've been doing this for so long, Carol. You've helped so many people. Again, your face I've recognized for the longest of time because of Operation Transformation mainly, and the impact that that's had on people's lives. And you spoke about not knowing how to get to where you wanted to get to, but just going for it. And that's sometimes what you need to do in any area of your life. You have to trust the process that the way will become clear as you take the first step. And I think you've done that in so many areas. You've done that in your business life. You've done that in your fitness life. You've done that when you got onto television with Noel, that you didn't know how these things would pan out, but you kind of just went for it and just trust the process that it will work out. I absolutely love that.
Yeah, to be honest, I think when, you know, for me, it's always been belief. Like, I've been brought up to believe that I could achieve anything. And I suppose from a family level, to be brought up that way is amazing. I was just brought up to believe once you work hard for something, if you work hard enough, well, you know, you have a good chance of getting it. So for me, when I walked out of Smurfit, I owed, I paid, I think it was 12 or 13 grand for the course. I borrowed that from the credit union. I walked out halfway through. I was in debt by 7 grand and a car loan on top of that. So I was in debt by another 15K. So it was over nearly 25K in debt. But I said, look, you know what? I got very much like a mood board out, if you like. It's like, I want them. There's a guy in the UK at the time called Matt Roberts, who book I just finished reading, and I really liked it. I really liked his brand. I loved how the book just read. I was like, if ever I could do a book, this would be it. This is what I'd love to do. So that was on the back of the door. I lived in a one bedsit down in East Wall that was damp and had a paraffin heater and had like an outdoor toilet. It wasn't luxurious, but it was. But at the time, I didn't care because it was just, this is, you know, I wanted to kickstart my life. And mood board was very much that. It was right, getting 50, you know, getting a business target of, I think originally it was probably 70K for the year. To get, how do I have to do that? Right, I have to do 55 sessions a week, whatever the number was. And just, I'd be target driven. So I'd have, you know, monthly targets, bi-monthly targets, yearly targets. And whatever I had to do to hit those targets is what I did. Like, one of the big things for me was I sat down with the people around me and said, look, for the next 5 years, this is my goal. This is the only thing that I actually want to do, which is I want to hit my targets and I ain't going to work. And if you have an issue with that, well, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to be around because I'm just going to be working. And I missed funerals, I missed weddings, I missed parties, I missed loads of stuff, birthdays, you name it, I missed it. Because in my mind, all I wanted to do was just hit my targets. So for the 5 years, it was literally, up until about probably 10 years in, I began to balance it a little bit. But originally, for the first certainly five, work was the only, was all I did. It was all I wanted to do and all I thought about. And all I went to bed dreaming about work. I woke up in the morning dreaming about work. It was all about work and just trying to build this brand. And it was just using targets all the way through. So it was like numbers. And then it was like, oh, geez, I'd love a Mini Cooper. Wouldn't it be amazing if I had a Mini Cooper S? It's, oh, my God, I'd love one. And then I go to bed dreaming of driving the Mini Cooper and you know, the color of it and whatever. And I'd be a big believer in the subconscious and the power of that, because you might magically, after about 2 years, I got it. And then, of course, it was the next thing. It's like, well, Joel, well, I'd love whatever. And originally, it was very material. I think when you're young, that's okay. Some people were frowning upon that. I personally don't. I think, you know, I love cars. I love cars. So it was, you know, literally cars. So I wanted, another Mini, and then I wanted a Jeep, and then I wanted an Audi, and it just built from there. I think by having those targets, it just gives you a reason to get out of bed in the morning. When you get up at 4 or half 4 in the morning, you need that reason. You need to have a very strong faith for why you're getting up at 4:30 in the morning, or why you're working double the hours that your friends work. Or for me, I just love to do it. I think if you have people, you know, listeners who are starting out, the biggest decision you have to make is, are you willing to put the work in? And if you're not, that's cool. That's totally cool. But then there's a trade-off to that, which is maybe the growth of your brand, or the growth of your client base, or the growth of whatever your goal is going to be. If you, you know, if you really want to grow your brand, that has to be all you think about. Or certainly from my perspective, from my opinion, that has to be all you want to do. And every bit of energy, every bit of thought has to go into that process. And you surround yourself with people who can help you do that. Because if people are kind of pulling at you, it just takes away from the chances of hitting your targets. But no matter what goals I've set, it's always been just graft and more graft and more graft. And then it's continually setting goals. So every 3 months, I sit down, I put aside some time. I will get a big sheet of paper out, and I'll start mapping out the goals for the next 3 months and the goals for the year. They're in my diary. I have an old school paper diary. I still work on paper. And in the front of that page is my top 3 goals for business and my top 3 goals for personal. So every day I look at it at least 5, 6, 7 times a day. And it just keeps me focused and keeps me on track. And every 3 months I tie back to that. And I'll meet with the people I work with, both the team and the gym, about my management company, to make sure that we're hitting the goals, we're hitting the targets that we want to. And it gives us direction that we're always steering together in towards hitting them. So, for example, creating a podcast was something I've been trying to do for the good of 3 years. Because I wanted to do it with a really good sponsor behind me. Laya Healthcare came on board. I agreed to sponsor it. But that was 3 years in the making. The fifth book was 2.5 years in the making. The first book was 3 years in the making. And things don't happen overnight. But if you really want it, they've been top of my goal list in the diaries for those years. And I just kept working towards to try and make them happen. So look, if you're starting out, be willing to work hard. Set your targets. You know, just be willing to work harder than anybody else, and dramatically increase your chances of success, I think.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. The thing that I love so much about hard work and just putting the hours in and putting the reps in, you know, business reps or body reps, is it's controllable. That one of the things that I talk to people that are coming through my mentorship or mastermind programs or people coming through my fitness programs, you have to control the controllables. Something like hard work is completely controllable. Genetics, you can't control it. You can't go back and change your mother and father. Your starting point with money, what family you were born into, you can't go back and change that. But things like your work and the hours you put in to work towards whatever it is you're trying to achieve, that's completely controllable and up to you whether you decide to do it. And it sounds like from your point of view, and I have a very similar thought philosophy, that you just make the decision that this is what I'm going to do until I've achieved it, or until, you know, the path becomes clearer. I'm just going to keep focusing on this. And I love the acronym for FOCUS, follow on one course until success. And it sounds like that's a very much something that you've done in your business life, in your fitness life. And I love the way you split your business and personal goals. I have a very similar philosophy. I've got four quadrants. I've got health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. So health, physical health, how my body's feeling, my energy levels, wealth, my bank account, love, the relationships, my family, and my fulfillment, the podcasts, writing books, etc. And I think one of the things that always surprises me, and it shouldn't, that every time I talk to somebody that is as successful as you are in the areas of your life that you put focus on, everybody has some form of accountability either to themselves or to somebody else. And I think that take home message is absolutely crucial.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you've got to surround yourself with people who are working towards the same goal you are. That you can account to for it. So, for example, for years, and I still do not as much now because I've got as much time, but I love taking people for coffee, or I love taking people for lunch and picking their brains. So, like, when I started out, I was 22, I was taking these really high-powered businessmen for lunch and just picking their brains about life and about business and about stuff. And, you know, and I still do it every now and again. And now, I suppose it's sometimes flipped, where I get emails from people coming, so I'd love to work with you. I'm like, well, meet me for coffee, let's have a chat. And they may not end up working with me, but I love the coffee bit. I think sharing knowledge, I think, is really important. I think, look, it is important to say I haven't achieved, like, there's a huge chunk of my life that I got neglected, which is probably the social and component of it. And that was certainly that was something that I'm trying to address a little bit now. But I still love to work. My hours are still deeply mental. So, you know, I'm not perfect, and I would never claim to be. Even on a fitness perspective, I get bad days like everybody else, where all I want is a pizza, and sometimes I have it, sometimes I don't. You know, as a brand, we're not the extreme brand. So the stuff that we've done is great, but, like, there's huge downsides to that too. I think it's important to be honest about that. Like, you know, downsides are certainly on a friendship level. I've got amazing friends, but it's a small group, because a lot of the friends, they couldn't stick around because I miss everything. I get texts, and there's only so many times people send you texts asking to go out for a drink or out for a night out, and you're like, I'm too tired. I've been working 10 hours or 12 hours or 14 hours. I just haven't got the energy. So there is that component of my life, and I'm beginning to address it a little bit now. And that's one of my, you listen to your four quadrants, that's certainly one of mine that needs to improve a huge amount. But the trade-off is, I still have all these business things that I want to do, and loads more to do, and they're really important too. So that's my biggest learning curve is trying to maximize that I can just balance things out a little bit more. And as you hit your mid-30s, you begin to kind of address that a little bit. So I think that's important to say. I don't want to come across as perfect, because I'm certainly not. I'm far from.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of it is just identifying what area of our life that needs the most work. Again, I'm the exact same. Some areas I find a lot easier. We're slightly opposite on the fitness side. I've always been found that very, very easy, but I really struggle on the relationship side, the social side, similar to yourself, but very much so in things like romantic relationships and showing up there. So I dedicate more time to reading books on that area, working with coaches in that area. It's identifying what area of your life, and the reason I use the four quadrants is health, wealth, love, and fulfillment. They're tangible for me, and I see them because they're on my whiteboard, and I see them every day. And you can identify which one doesn't need as much work for you. It sounds like the business is the easy side, because you have that grinder personality that you just get up and get it done. But to be able to identify that the social needs a little bit more work, that self-awareness is brilliant. And I think just asking yourself those questions, for anyone that's listening, you don't have to be amazing in all areas of your life, but ask yourself which areas do you need to dedicate a little bit more time to, what information you need to consume, or what people do you need to be around to improve the area of your life that you need to bring up.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of prioritizing it. You know, for me, the priority was work, it was business, it was brand, it was trying to jump into this niche that really hadn't kicked off. Where now, people starting it now, it's such a different playing field to what it was when I kicked off. But as you get older, your priorities kind of change a little bit. And plus, even, you know, like, for example, our priority now is my wife. We've got two fabulous dogs and two cats as well. But it's about spending, you know, time with the dogs, and it's about spending time at home with Jean, because she works big hours as well. So it's about the weekends. They're the weekends, and, you know, I work some Saturdays, but not always. And it's about putting aside some time for us, which is really important, such as the holiday. And you know, we try and go away for a couple of weekends every now and again as well. But it's just what and it's hard. Like taking a pen to paper and identifying your pros and your weaknesses and your good points and your bad points. That's difficult and it's not that easy to do. But I think it's really important. So like every year, December, I shut down work in about the 13th or 14th of December because everyone's getting drunk and no one wants to talk health. So we go away for at least a week minimum, and I spend probably 2 days of that week just literally downloading and saying, right, what have we done this year that we've wanted to? What haven't we done? Why haven't we done it? And it's that brutally honest component of, right, I didn't finish that race. Why didn't I finish it? Or we didn't hit that business target. Why didn't we finish it? And it's like, because I didn't do this and didn't do that. You know, that component is quite difficult, but then it keeps you focused for the following year. And it's like being with a client, it's the goal and kind of reward, the goal reflection theory, that like if you hit your goal or you didn't hit your goal, you reflect upon it and then you build up on it for the next goal. And I think once you're learning, I've been a huge believer, like even race, I remember years ago when kind of social media was just kicking off, I used to get a lot of grief from all these Ironman triathletes for not finishing these races. I'm like, look, once I'm learning, it's not. I don't see it as a failure. I learn every time. I talk to coaches and I read books and I educate myself as much as I can. And all I do is my very, very best. And if that best results in a DNF not finishing the event, that's perfect. That's not ideal, but it's fine. I don't have an issue with it. Where guys kind of emailing me on Facebook, even with the whole Operation Transformation thing, it's bonkers. When the show's on, like last year, I got one email from a guy from a trainer, who I'm not going to mention because I just it's not my style, but like. It must have been about 1,500 words of what I was wearing, or what I wasn't wearing, and why I wasn't wearing it, and have an injury because I squat funny, and I actually do have an injury. That's the reason I squat funny. It was just the oddest email, and like about why I wasn't doing things his way, and life is just far too short. I think we're in an industry which is, you know, you surround yourself with positive people, but we're also in a very egotistical industry with lots of big opinions and people who love to force other opinions out, and social media gives them the right to do it. So my reply, whether it's on Twitter or Instagram or an email, whenever something like that comes in, I always offer to meet them for coffee and discuss the problem. And they never have the balls to meet me for coffee. It's just the whole idea of publicly discussing it is just far too scary. But anyway,
it's such an interesting one because it's something that I've struggled with myself. And again, I love one of my favorite quotes of all time is Marcus Aurelius, who's the former emperor of Rome, in his book Meditations, that everything we hear is an opinion, not a truth, and everything we see is a perspective, not a fact. And everybody has an opinion on what somebody else is doing, or they have a perspective on how it should be done, not realizing that a lot of the time you're just projecting your own insecurity onto somebody else. And the fact that you said it there, when you put that out to somebody and go, here, look, I'll meet you for coffee, let's do it, and no one takes you up on that, it just shows that it's projected insecurity, and you're going to feel like, I love that that's how you handle it, because
what they're looking for is A, for you to rise to them, and B, an email conversation or a Twitter conversation about it. And I'm like, well, no, because like A, particularly with the show, like the show is built, the way we build it is it has to be free, so like everything is free, so therefore I can't use a dumbbell, a medicine ball, a barbell, a kettlebell, a battle rope. Can't use anything. Hence the reason we use water bottles, because it's the only way I can get free weights into a workout. And I always get sick over that. Like, but actually, from trainers, and they have no idea, because they never looked at the plans. They've never looked at anything. All they've seen is, oh, he uses water bottles. That's really funny. That's ridiculous. But actually, it's not, because there's no other way to get a free weight into a workout by using a set of water bottles. And it's just really funny. It's because they're looking for you to get really, really kind of aggressive with them, because they're aggressive towards you. And when you actually diffuse it instantly by saying, look, cool, that's your opinion, great, no problem, let's hook up and chat about it in person. Give me a call when you're in Dublin, here's my number, here's my email, and I'll meet you for lunch, we'll have a chat. And it's just gas. And it's life's too short to get caught up in negativity. The role that we're in, our job is to be positive. I think years ago when I trained in my first diploma, the guy who taught the course, he was like, look, if you ever get a chance to do something publicly, use it for the right reasons. Don't use it to knock somebody else. Don't use it to take down somebody else. Use it for a positive purpose. So I've always done that, whether it's on radio, whether it's a podcast, I've never named and shamed the trainer. The guy who emailed me, I still have the email at home. But I remember when I read it, I was so upset at the time. It really got to me because the detail that he went to, and it actually really upset me for about a week. I was like, I could take a photograph of this. I could push this out. I've got good social media numbers, and just. But I was like, no, that's the wrong thing to do, because we're in a positive industry. People see me follow myself. They follow the same with yourself, Brian. It's about they follow you for a reason, and that's to improve their life in some way, shape, or form, be it through tips or be it through videos or whatever. And I was like, no, that's not what we do. Let's just leave it there and move on, and just keep going forward, and just put all my energy into moving forward, and not get distracted by just negativity like that. It's just life's too short.
Can I ask you then, Carol? Just because of the way you handled it, and I think anybody that's in the public limelight, and again, similar to myself in just different areas in terms of social media, etc., I've had to deal with that on myself in terms of when I started my social media channels first, the criticisms that used to come my way used to absolutely rock me to my core. And one of the quotes I actually had beside my bed was, "The only taste of success some people get is when they take a bite out of you." And that was my way of trying to handle the criticism that was coming into me. That particular situation, or any other situation, because I know there's a lot of people listening that either care about the opinions of others or are worried about what people are saying about them. What was your kind of self-talk or internal dialogue that week? How did you go from being like rocked and really either angry or annoyed or upset or whatever emotions you were feeling to a week later coming out the other side? What was that kind of internal dialogue?
Yeah, well, somewhat, like when I first got it, like it rocked me. It really, really, really rocked me. Like when the show's on, because of my personality, for the first 8 years, and even now I still do it, like I'd be there, I'd watch it back, I'd look at what mistakes I made, how I speak. Like I have a lisp sometimes when I talk, and my speech isn't, my words aren't always perfect. And I'd be watching it back, I'd be critically watching it back, I'd be making notes, I'd be ringing production, what can I do better, why didn't I get more airtime? Because don't forget, the show's edited, so like, people see, maybe 10% of what's filmed, maybe less, maybe kind of 5% of what's filmed. And we've no control over that. We don't get to see it before it goes out. So we're watching it with everybody else, wondering what comment made it through, what comment didn't make it through, how is this talk generally put. And then of course, it's nearly natural that you go online with the trends. So it's like really popular online, and he was really mean to that girl, or he's really mean to that girl, or whatever, or he said this, or God, he looks terrible, or whatever. Like I had a beard for one of the shows, for one of the series, and people were calling, "Oh, he looks terrible with the beard." And like when the really personal stuff that really upsets me, I learned to park it, as opposed to reacting instantly. And that's like the easiest tool I can give to anyone is like, if you react instantly, that's the goal. The goal is to upset you, and the goal is to bother you. And that you fight back, and all of a sudden there's a big Twitter controversy, it's a big controversy online or whatever. I just very much learned to park it. If it really upsets me, I'll deal with it. I'll just give myself an hour to calm. I'll go for the four walk with the dogs, or I'll go for a run, or go for a cycle, and I'll try and process the issue. And I can generally process it back. Do I hear somebody emailing me? They want to be on the show, and they're not, and they're pissed because their way of trying to channel that. I can just generally talk myself down. My fuse is quite long. Every now and again, it can be short depending on the situation. But with stuff like that, it's really difficult. And for example, I know you have a book yourself. When you have a book out, you walk into a shop, and like there's you in the store on the shelf, and all the content within it. Anyone can open the book. They can find a fault with it somewhere. They can get a real big opinion about that fault, and then it becomes really personal because you put so much work into it. But again, it goes with the territory. You know, you put yourself out there, be it online or be it in other forms of media. Yeah, and it just goes with the territory that people will have a problem with you. They won't agree what you do, particularly in our industry. I don't think there's a more opinionated industry on the planet than what we do. And there are people who won't agree with your training methods, for example. Again, if they don't, there's nothing I can do about it. My track record is 12 years of operation transformation. All the leaders, all the people who follow the plans, we've never had an injury, never had an issue. It's an uber safe plan because we don't get to meet most of the people who follow the plans, but who are the people who follow them online at home. Their clients, you never get to screen, ever. So therefore, the plan has to be built for, I'm a fictitious person in my head that every plan is built for. She's about 6 stone overweight. she hasn't exercised for 10 years. She has to be able to do every single exercise that I put into those plans, as well as the leaders, but also for the people who follow them. And that means the plans are generally very simple. But some trainers take huge offense to that, that there should be more of this and more of that, because that's what they believe in. But you can get really upset about it, you can fight back, but you have to develop a slightly harder core. For me, it's just putting it to one side, it's leaving it for 24 hours and trying to relax it about over the course of a 24-hour period. And I'll talk to Jean about it. My wife, she generally calms me down a little bit. It's diffusing it quickly. If you let it go and it becomes a conversation, a negative conversation online, that's just going to get bigger and bigger. And if you diffuse, say, look, let's take this offline, meet me for a coffee, name your day, name your time, and I'll see you there. That tends to sort of, if they don't reply, and all of a sudden you've forgotten about it by 2 or 3 days later.
Yeah, I love that. It's funny that you say you park it. My language on that, which is very similar, is if anything ever comes my way, I ask myself, right, am I acting emotionally or am I acting rationally? And I have to kind of pull it and park it. And I never try. Well, I try again. It's the constant learning curve and a daily battle. But try not to ever react to anything emotionally and just step back and look at it from a wider perspective and be a bit more rational. I love that you just park it, let it sit for a day. And the truth is, normally when you sleep on a lot of things, they tend to not bother you as much the following day. So my advice for anyone, just to piggyback on what Carol said, that if you ever get annoyed by somebody, either what somebody else has done externally or something that you've done yourself that you're not happy with, leave it for 24 hours. Just have a sleep on it. And if you're still annoyed about it the next day, you're going to be slightly more rational and you'll be able to come at it from a wider perspective and deal with it, or else it won't bother you at all, which it sounds like that happens in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I think it comes with age. When I was younger, it bothered me even more. I've been watching the show, I get really upset because I would have done something, or it wouldn't have, or my speech wouldn't have been great, or there's a bad camera angle, or you don't look yourself, or whatever. And it used to really upset me. And then I went through a phase of not watching it, or even columns I write, or radio interviews that I do where I go in, and sometimes it just doesn't go to plan. You get an interviewer who doesn't like you, or you get a really tough, I've had one or two of those over the years, I've got really hard interviews, and because the presenter doesn't agree with what you're doing, or some aspect of what you're doing, you get grilled on national radio with 200,000 people listening in. All you can do is your best, and all you can do is learn from it. And I think with age, that comes a little bit. You calm down a little bit with age, and you learn to process it better, such as your 24-hour thing that you sleep on, and then you make a more rational decision. But my biggest advice would be just not to rise to it. That's generally the purpose of it is. But by not rising to it, just a kill kindness of that. That's it there.
I love it. Carol, your mindset is really, really strong in terms of, again, I love the way you see the world. I love the way that I would imagine your self-talk and internal dialogue is. Is there anything that you put it down to having been able to cultivate a strong mindset over the years? Is there any books you've read? Is it the people you surround yourself with? Or is it just experiencing things and learning from them? Is there anything that you've used yourself personally that you feel has helped you come out to this point where you're at now, where you're able to handle most things and achieve whatever it is you set out to achieve? Is there anything, books or people or anything like that, that you found has helped you over the years?
Yeah, I suppose to start with, how I was brought up is a huge component of it. I was brought up with two parents who were self-employed, who worked pretty much every hour there was. They still do. My dad is here. He's nearly 70 next year. My mum's 70 next year. He still works in the gym from 5:30 in the morning until 7 o'clock at night. He loves it. So part of it was that. I was brought up with that kind of ethic in me. I used to go to school about an hour and a half from where we lived. I'd leave the house at 6 in the morning. I'd be the first person in school because I was the only way to get there. I got lifts into the gym. And then I remember the Jamie's had dropped me to school. So I'd be in school for 7:30. Playing football with the janitor to be fucking in at 8 o'clock. So it's one of the starts there, but it's how I was brought up, just to with the hard work ethic, I suppose. From there, I read all the time. Brian Tracy is somebody who I would have been surrounded with when I was probably in my late teens. I went to one of his seminars. He would have been a very early less evangelical Tony Robbins kind of vibe.
Big fan. I read a lot of Brian Tracy as well.
He's one of the originals of all of the, I hate the word guru, but of all these self-confessed gurus now. Brian Tracy wouldn't be the original. A lot of the stuff that that is being put out now was stuff that he wrote about 30 years ago. It was brilliant. His books are amazing, and his audiobooks, and he was just ahead of the curve. He was absolutely amazing. So I saw him live in ECD when I was about 17 or 18, and I totally bought into it. It was subliminal and setting your goals and just working towards things, and I really like that. I read constantly in terms of what kind of books. I read everything, to be honest. Sometimes fitness books, sometimes it's a bit like work. I don't like fiction, apart from Harry Potter. I still love Harry Potter. So I read basically anything. I try to keep an eye on kind of the new trends that are coming in. So all the new diet books, I'll always read them just to see what they're on about and what the basis of them is. So if I'm on a radio show or if a client asks me about it, I can say, look, yeah, here's what it is, here's the process. It's, you know, ketogenic or it's whatever, but at least I read about it. In terms of the people, I'm inspired by real people probably more. I've been to Tony Robbins. I was at one of the convention centers 2 years ago. Have to say, didn't do it for me. I don't like the cult component to it. I don't like the let's all go up and dance and have accountability partners. And the whole thing I just couldn't. It just didn't do it for me. I've seen that before in a very different kind of cult setting years, a long, long, long time ago. I just didn't buy into it whatsoever. I just didn't get it. It was amazing. I don't know if you're at it.
I was at it. I was at it. A very similar.
It was mental.
Go on.
It was mad. It was bonkers. This is a seriously high-powered room now in terms of business people and really high-end, like expensive tickets. And he had them all do whatever he wanted. If he said go jump in the river, they would have gone and jumped in the river because he said it was bonkers. It was the most mental thing. And if you look behind it, you can see kind of what he's trying to do. So he's making a statement. He's backing it up, and then the whole dance and dance like your life depended on jump in the air and hug each other. And that bit's very strange. It's very, very odd. And then he backs it up with a story from the audience. Someone stands up and says, "Oh, I did it and it worked for me," and everyone thinks it's great. It didn't quite work for me because, again, all the stuff he's talking about is just rehashed. There's nothing new, and you can get it from better sources. So, again, Brian Tracy would be the main one I would go back to. And I would read business books all the time that are inspirational. Richard Branson's book is inspirational. The Wolf of Wall Street book is inspirational in a different way. In terms of what I read, that's the kind of stuff that I read. In terms of what I listen to, I'm getting into learning more about podcasts. Obviously, having researched it for my own, it's a fascinating field of just content. But I think the same rule applies that no matter where you're getting your content from, you need to look at who is delivering the content. And I think they've got to be qualified. I think they have to be experienced. I think there's a lot of people peddling a lot of stuff which is just nonsense, and they have no qualifications whatsoever, but they have an opinion. And they think that, for example, there's loads of fitness books out at the minute. They're models, and they're producing fitness books, or they're producing lifestyle books, yet they haven't got a qualification. They have no insurance. It's just because and that really have a huge issue wrong, but I have a huge problem with that because I think that it just leads people astray. And so, look, no matter what you read or who you listen to, you just got to make sure that you're listening to the right people who will help you get towards your goals, be it books or be it podcasts or be it radio shows or stuff like that. Even in terms of newspapers, I try and read happy stuff. I hate reading the really heavy stuff in newspapers because it just doesn't, that just has a negative impact on my day. It doesn't really, so I try to read just better stuff, better content, and keep my mind as positive as I can towards the day.
Yeah, I love that. Well, it's so true that it's up, again, comes back to taking ownership of whatever it is you consume and whoever it is you consume. There's a couple of points I want to pull out there just because I think you've said a lot of stuff that I've spoken on the podcast in the past about, again, fitness. And again, I fall into this bracket of fitness influencer. You fall into that bracket of fitness influencer. But we're trainers. We're trying to help. I think this is why I resonate so much with your message, that it's very clear that obviously you do all the operation transformation and all these things, but at the core, it's trying to help people and make the world a better place because you're here. I think that's why it resonates so much with your message. And that advice on just because you're following someone on social media or reading a fitness influencer or fitness model's book, their training strategies and their nutritional way of eating may work for them, but that may not be the best thing for you to do. And we can get kind of caught up in this first confusion bias where we see, oh, well, that person's doing this workout or he's eating this food, I need to do that, and if I do that, I'll look like him. That's not the way the body works. You can live exactly like me. You can train exactly like Carl for his Ironmans and you may not get the same results. You can train like you did for the marathons and you may not get the same time. You can train like I did for bodybuilding shows and you may not get the same results because your genetics are different, your body is different. And what I love about your podcast as well, Carl, and the information you put out, and I heard this on Tim Ferriss's podcast, that the people you consume and everyone listening, we kind of work as filters for these ideas or these people or these nutritional strategies or training programs may be worth experimenting with, and here's an opinion on them. And we're kind of filtering what we think will support people and what will help people. So what I love about what you said there, it's very important to consume different people, read different books, listen to different podcasts, but be very aware that what you're consuming is going to program your thinking. And if it's not supporting you and helping you move forward, then you may want to audit what it is you're following. And the thing that I talk on social media, and you probably recognize this with some of your clients because it's very prevalent in the fitness industry, that if you're following, you know, 500 people and 499 of them are amazing jacked guys or super slim bikini girls and you're overweight and feeling a bit self-conscious about yourself, they may not be the best people to be following, unless they're providing value and helping you serve and become a better version of you. But if they're putting up constant selfies of how good they look and they're making you feel insecure, you got to audit that and just be a little bit mindful of the people you're following. And again, I just wanted to kind of piggyback on that. I know it's not exactly what you were saying, but it just triggered that when you spoke about the fitness model books.
I think you're right. It's how you filter it in terms of when you read it or when you listen to it. That it's got to be stuff that helps you go in the direction you're going and not pulls away from it. The biggest issue with the influencer, and it's a funny word. It's a really funny word. It's up there with guru. You know, but it's the biggest issue. The fact is, look, the photographs are fake. That's the real. That's spade to spade. Most of the time, if for a lot of the that kind of buff bods or the bikini girls with the big bums or the a lot of the guys that are ripped, like, they're not real pictures. They're angled a certain way to look a certain way, or they are edited a certain way to look a certain way. And there's a new I can't remember the account. There's a new Instagram account set up. It's Irish Fit Fan Fails or something like that, where they're exposing a lot of these influencers and say, look, here's the actual photograph and here's what they posted online. Because the biggest issue is the fact that it's that a lot of the time you're not seeing content that necessarily is real. And then you do feel bad because you haven't got the six pack or that you haven't got the bikini bod that person has. But actually that person hasn't got it either because they've edited it down to look a certain way. So I think your message is bang on, that if you are following people, like, filter your social media accounts and make sure that they're having a positive impact on what you're trying to do. And if not, just get rid of them, because after about 2 days, you'll have totally forgotten about that person. So it's an important point. It's good.
Yeah, it's so true.
Today's episode of the podcast is sponsored by Clean Cut Meals. Clean Cut Meals offer a professional meal prep service and have various plans to suit all different needs and levels of fitness. Whether you're starting your fitness journey, prepping for a show or a shoot, or play high-level sport, Clean Cut Meals are freaking awesome. I use them for the entire preparation from Marathon to Sabla last April and have been using them ever since. They're just absolutely killer for saving time. Their food is awesome and tasty. I've completely gone off script, but I love the service they provide, and there's someone I'm going to be using for a long time in the future. The guys deliver nationally, so no matter where you are in the country, they can deliver. If you want to get on board and spend the time that you save shopping, prepping, cooking, and cleaning on the other things that you love, just visit www.cleancutmeals.ie to make an order, or if you have any questions, drop the guys an email, info@cleancutmeals.ie. I'm pretty sure that is on the website, cleancutmeals.ie as well, so you can just put them into Google, search them. The links are on my social medias. The guys are absolutely awesome. Also, you can use the code BKF at the checkout to get 20% off your first order. Definitely recommend checking them out, guys. Not too many meal prep services that I can recommend to put my name to, so cannot recommend Clean Cut Meals enough. So BKF at the checkout, 20% off your first order. Regardless, go check them out on www.cleancutmeals.ie. And now, ready for today's episode. I hope you enjoy it.
Carl, there's been so much value here. I've absolutely loved it. Like, I'm going to have so much fun going back on the timestamps on this. I want to finish with a couple of rapid fire questions. So just a couple of things you can, I call them rapid fire, but I'm the worst rapid fire person in the world, because if you want to expand on them, you can. If you want to go one word or just use a couple of sentences with it, by all means, take free rein with it. So I'll throw them at you and basically just come back with whatever comes to mind.
Cool.
Okay, first one. When you think of the word successful, apart from your parents, who's the first person that comes to mind and why?
Oh, Roy Keane by a mile. Roy Keane, without a doubt. Yeah, Roy Keane. He's the player. He, and I can tell you that the time was when Man United played Juventus on the way to winning the European Cup. Roy Keane got yellow carded for a pass, for tackling a guy in the first half, that meant he couldn't play in the final, yet he single-handedly turned the game around and United got through to the final. He basically ran the whole team for the game. Just watching his career from when he arrived at United through to what he became under Alex Ferguson, was that success. He just was the ultimate professional, and a lot of people have mixed opinions on him. I remember watching that match and just being inspired by what I saw and by the selflessness of what he did. It's a strange one for us, maybe, how I see success, but I can remember watching the match and that kind of clicked in my head. Again, it's effort and it's graft and it's hard. All the attributes that I have tried to bring to my business, I summed up in that one match. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, I love it. It's funny because I remember that led United onto the treble that year. And just a little side note. That's what did it. It was that game, because they had no right to beat Juventus in that, and he missed the final against Bayern Munich.
Yeah, they were 3-1 down. He made the tackle, and then he just, for the whole game, the selflessness of what he did, it was like, wow, this is just amazing. I remember watching it, been totally inspired as a teenager.
I love it. I take it you're a United fan, Carly, yeah?
I am.
Comes straight through. It comes through in your voice. I'm an Arsenal fan, so we'll move on quickly to the next question. What purchase of €100 or less has most positively affected your life in the last 6 or 12 months?
These are tough questions. €100 or less... Oh, I know. I got it. Oh, no, actually, I didn't buy it. It was a present, but it cost me €20.
Yeah, that'll do. That'll count.
It was a mug, and the word, it's a, A, I like big, I like, my wife was from West Cork, so tea's boom, quite a prevalent thing in our house, and she's got me into tea. And on the mug is Be Amazing, and a star on it. I love that mug. I get up in the morning and I see that mug and I'm like, right, here we go, we're going to do it. And when I get a really crap day and I come home after a really busy day and I'm feeling absolutely wiped or something doesn't work out or whatever, that mug just, there's something very, it's very sad, but there's something very comforting about it and it just gets my head together. And it'll probably only cost about 15 or €20, but it's absolutely, I love that mug. I love it. I really love that mug. And it just keeps my head, helps keep my head straight.
I absolutely love that. That's got to be one of my favorite things that's been mentioned. Something so simple but amazing with it. Next one. Beside your own podcast, beside my podcast, is there any other podcast that you particularly like to listen to? It may not be in the fitness genre. I listen to a lot of business podcasts myself. Is there any particular podcast that you, when it comes up on your screen, new episode, you're like, yes, can't wait to listen to this?
There are probably two. The West Cork one was amazing. I loved that. But I think there's no more new episodes to it. But that was probably the first podcast that I totally got hooked on. just the story of the host. It was just an amazing podcast. It was really, really well put together. Serial is the one I listen to now, actually, and they post quite regularly. Same kind of thing. It's kind of a crime. It's kind of a whodunit, or did they do it, over the course of 10, 12 eps. And I find that really good. I find it's a nice not distraction, but it's a nice breakaway from work. So on the drive home or on the drive to work in the morning, I'll stick that on, and it's half an hour of just downtime where I think about nothing else but did this person do it or did this person not do it. So it's a lovely breakaway from mental break from things.
Awesome. The next one, and I kind of might have an idea, but you may go in a different direction with this. Is there a book that you think everybody on the planet would benefit from reading? So not necessarily your favorite book or the one that you think is the best written, etc. But is there one that you read and went, more people, if they read this, the world would be a slightly better place? It can be in any genre or anything in general.
Yeah. Autobiography of a Yogi is the book I would recommend. I read it years ago, many years ago, and I still to this day can remember a good chunk of it, and I have read it two or three times since. So it's called Autobiography of a Yogi, and it's just brilliant. It's just really interesting. It's brilliant. I'm not going to give too much away. You just have to read it, and it's been around for quite a long time, so you'll pick it up on Amazon really quick, really, really easily. Amazing book. Everyone should read that, without a doubt.
I love it. That's I'm going straight onto my wish list after this. That's any book on ancient philosophy in any way, shape, or form, or anything by people that are high up in meditation, I get so much from because of the way they see the world. So I'm really excited. As soon as we're finished this, Carl, I'm going on to Audible. I'm going to see if it's on Audible and add it to my wish list.
Good.
Last one. Do you have a quote that you live by or refer to often?
Never give up is probably the one that I come back to. In my diary, I have a whole page of quotes, generally in one of the first couple of pages in the diary, that I randomly put in during the year. So when I come across ones, there's a brand of tea called Yogi Tea, the big herbal teas. And when you take it out of the wrapper and you put it into on the side of the tea bag, they have a little quote. I'm saying the best thing ever. So like I have in my page of my diary, I fill in the quotes. If I come across a really good quote, I'll stick it into the front page of my diary. And then I'll just randomly flick through it during the day. But never give up is probably the simplest one that I've had since day one when I walked out of Smurf and started putting the business plan together. It's like, I'll just never give up. And I tried to stick to that as best I can over the last 17 or 18 years.
I love it. Carl, this has been absolutely awesome. I cannot thank you enough. I'll be linking everything up in the show notes, your podcast, the website, the Amazon link for your book, the whole lot. But where is the best place for people to find out more about you?
Yeah, I suppose the website's the obvious one. It's carlhenry.ie. That was the first thing I did when I set the business up, was I just registered carlhenry.ie, and it's really handy for people. So everything lives there. All the stuff that we do, both in terms of the PT, in terms of the corporate company that I have, and in terms of the books and the podcasts and all, everything lives up there. So that'd be amazing. Much appreciated.
Amazing. So I will, everyone listening, all of Carl's links, his social media links, his book, his podcast is all going to be on the show notes on briankeenfitness.com. Carl, thank you so much again.
No, it's all. Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me on.